Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. Today on the show, we're going to talk about Farmville clones, iPhone version 4.0, and some pad thingy. But first, we are your hosts. I am Eric, and I'm here tonight with Lou.
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad tonight.
That's good. You know what? I would be doing better if I had my iPad.
That's right. You got to wait for yours.
Yeah. You know...
But you're getting a better version, hopefully.
I know, but it's so hard when you know it. Okay, so I didn't get an iPhone the first time around.
Neither did I. I waited till the 3G version came out. I waited for that.
Mm-hmm. I waited a little while after that because I wasn't sure I was going to get one right there. So I was about 2 or 3 months late to the 3G. Okay. And it's one thing to sit there and watch all of the blogs over and over again talking about all the different apps and how revolutionary the device is and all this kind of stuff. While I'm sitting there on my hands thinking, yeah, well, must be nice. But when you know you're getting one and you've got one ordered and the money has been taken out of your bank account and everybody else in the world has one and you don't, and you have a podcast where you talk about apps, and it would be so cool to be able to have it and talk about it like everybody else. And, oh, it's almost like it's worse.
I don't know. See, I made a decision not to buy it because I don't know. I figured I'll wait till version 2. Maybe I'll see what happens. I know I want one.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just as bad because I'm like, all this news is about all these cool things you can do, all these new apps coming out. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be like a year before I get one, though.
So, yeah.
It's tough either way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, for those of you out there who, you know what, whether you do or you don't have one, hopefully we'll have something for you here. Neither of us have one yet. And we were going to have a guest host on today who did get one, but unfortunately he wasn't available at the last minute. So hopefully we'll have him on next week. But we are going to discuss some things anyway. I've been keeping up voraciously with the app releases. I've even downloaded a bunch of apps already.
Have you really?
Absolutely.
You're getting ready.
I am so getting ready. Anything that's free or that's free for limited time or, you know, things like that, I've been going over there and snagging. But we'll talk about the apps in a little bit. So for those of you who have an iPad, hopefully we'll be able to give you some ideas on things you might want to look at. If you don't have an iPad, you'll get an idea of what all the hype is about. And you know, maybe whether it's for you, it's wise generally when a new device comes out to let other people, the early adopters, pick it up and give their opinions on it first. And then you can kind of judge based on their experiences whether or not to get one. So hopefully we can give you a little bit of that. Even though we don't have experience yet with it ourselves, I have been scouring the net for every little last morsel of opinion on this. And so we're going to pass a lot of that on to you this week. And hopefully that'll help you. And if you're sick of hearing about it, well, you know, it is newsworthy this week.
Not much we can do about that, yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of a bad week for you if you're sick of hearing about it. However, we do have some iPhone news, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
4.0?
That sounds like a good thing.
It sounds like it. We hope.
Yeah, well, we'll know later on this week, I guess, yeah. As we're recording it. It's coming out later on this week. They're going to do an introductory session at Apple talking about what the new iPhone 4.0 will do for us. No word yet as to whether or not they're going to release new hardware with that, though.
Right.
And word on when they're going to release it either. Probably summertime, I guess.
Yeah, you know, normally what they do is they'll announce the new operating system early so that developers have a chance to develop for it. And then sometime around June, they release the operating system. So keep in mind that this is just a preview. This is an introduction of what to expect. And then we get to sit around for several months going, ooh, I can't wait for it to show up. And then it'll finally show up. Though I bet most people will be distracted by the iPad. But so this is going to be on April 8th, which I think is a Thursday.
Yeah.
And it'll be at 10 o'clock a.m. And we'll have to talk to Rob to see if we can maybe post some updates once it comes up. We're not actually going to be at the event. If you know anything about them, it's kind of hard to get into those events. Apple is pretty picky about who they invite and who they don't. So, however,
yeah,
I didn't get
an invite.
Yeah, funny that.
I didn't get my iPad in the mail either. I thought I was going to get a preview copy, but
yeah. Yeah, you thought you were going to be one of the five people to get one, huh?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, that would be nice. Oh, well. So iPhone 4.0, the biggest rumors right now are multitasking.
Yep.
And which we've talked about before on the show a little bit, you know, whether or not we'd really want that. But allegedly, it's coming. A lot of people are expecting it to be coming anyway. And the other thing is, of course, rumors abound that Verizon might finally get the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows?
I think the thing I'm most worried about, and I shouldn't say worried about because I guess people that had Verizon were in the same boat that we would be if they got a different phone, but I don't mind. I wish they give it to every carrier out there, but I wish they'd all have the same phone, because I know what's going to happen. They're going to get a new phone for Verizon, and we're all going to be like, oh, I just got a contract with an AT&T phone. I can't get that new hardware. See, I really wish there was a way to separate the contract from the hardware, personally, because I always like that newest, latest, greatest technology.
Yeah, it would be nice. You know, that's really been the hardest thing, I think, about the iPhone all along, is that it's locked in. You know, I've got friends that want one, but, you know, they're on Sprint or they're on Verizon. They're not willing to change. And, you know, especially out on the West Coast, we talked before about that. Neither you or I have really had connectivity issues with AT&T. I mean, I'm not a lover of AT&T, but I haven't had any problems with them either.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I don't have any love for them, but they've never done anything really bad to me either.
But out on the West Coast, until just a while ago when they updated their towers, apparently you couldn't stay on a call. You know, you were getting dropped left and right. 3G coverage was pretty crappy.
Yeah, spotty.
Yeah, but I mean, it's supposed to be much better now. But that's the thing. If you could open it up to other networks, all the better, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see if that comes. And of course, the other fan favorite rumor for the iPhone 4.0 is going to be, and this is another hardware thing, is going to be a front-facing camera. I understand the desire for this, but I really don't want to stream my ugly mug out across the internet. You know?
Yeah, Facer Radio. I got the same thing.
Yeah. You know, I remember way back in the day, like right out of high school when I was working retail at Circuit City, they came out with this video phone thing. This big, ugly clunker that would sit on your desk with a camera and a horrible black and white display with like one frame per second.
Nice.
And, you know, they were like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, where would you use this? I mean, so I'm at home, right? And the phone rings, and okay, I'm in bed. I'm going to get up and walk over to the phone, and that's how I want people to be. You know, or I'm lounging around on the couch, or I'm walking around the house in my underwear. Seriously, do you really want to... I don't know. I mean, I get it a little bit, and it's great for, like, you know, webcams in general are nice if you have grandparents that live far away and you want to show off the youngster on his birthday or things like that. You know, that's all fine and dandy, but...
Yeah, and I can see in business maybe you'd want to have that some situations, but for the most part, it's kind of a gimmick, I think.
You know, they say that, and I've worked in the audio-video industry in a corporate professional environment where we've done a lot of VTC work, video teleconferencing. Especially with the government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've helped set up big, you know, like what you see on 24, the command center at CTU. Okay, that type of thing where you've got, and they make it look really fancy on the show. It's basically the same equipment. It just, you know, the environment doesn't look quite that high tech. And, you know, it's great if you're going to have a meeting where you want it to feel like a meeting. But if you're on a phone, it's not going to be the same. You know, you're not going to have a multi-stream, you know, multiple different pictures on your phone from four different remote sites come up and actually care about that. You're going to get, I mean, the phone's small enough as it is. Yeah. And then if you're going to get like a quarter of the display per person.
Yeah, yeah. The only person who's going to get that is in the office on the big screen if they have that. But.
Right. And maybe they care about that. Mm. But then you don't want that. That's not going to benefit you. That's going to benefit your boss. So just tell them, oh, yeah, my phone doesn't do that. And then you don't have to deal with it. And then you can just lurk in the background with your phone on mute while you're doing whatever you're doing out in the field. That's what I used to do.
That's what you always do, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, so right now, honestly, none of the rumors are all that convincing. I'm not really convinced we're going to get multitasking. The front-facing camera, maybe. Mm. Yeah, I could maybe see that one coming. I don't know that Apple cares that much to do that yet. And the Verizon thing, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes when it comes to contract deals that, I mean, that's anybody's guess.
Yeah, in last year, Verizon came out saying, yes, we will have one in, what, second quarter of or first quarter of 2010, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, so, they're running out of time on that
even
one.
Even if you hear them from really good sources, like this was from Verizon, who knows?
Yeah. All right, well, you know what? We'll find out on Thursday.
Yes.
So I don't know. If maybe we'll have to do a special quick App Chatter episode on that. So we'll probably be discussing it here in App Chatter. We'll also, our sister site over at Tech Chatter will probably be talking about it too. But April 8th, 10 p.m. Pacific time. So if you're on the East Coast, remember, add 3 to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there'll be a lot of sites doing live blogs of it. And, of course, all of the sites will have news after the fact. That's all you'll hear about on Thursday.
Yes. This is a whole week of Apple news.
Yeah, the Apple haters out there, man, they're having a rough week.
They're not happy, yeah.
No, not at all. So I noticed you picked up a game called We Rule.
Yes. It's I don't know. It's kind of a Farmville clone, I guess, from Facebook, if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. It did kind of remind me of an old PC game called, I think it was Lords of the Realm, that had a little more fighting involved with it, too, but you still had to, you know, cultivate fields and do everything else to gain experience points. But, I don't really get that kind of game, personally. It was fun a little bit, I guess, but I guess they had a tremendous response to it, though.
Yeah. I downloaded it the day it came out. And the entire first day, connectivity was just spotty like crazy. Like literally one out of every 25 or 30 attempts would get through.
Oh, wow.
Now here's the thing. It's so reliant upon the server that you load up the game and it connects with the server to, you know, to get you into your account. Okay, yeah. And then you're on what's basically a map screen. It's like a linear graphical list of castles of all of your friends. So then you click on the castle you want. And at the beginning, it's only yours, right? Because you may not have added friends or anything like that. It uses the plus-plus network.
Yep, so you add your friends in there. You don't see anybody else on your screen.
Right.
Yep.
So you click on your castle. So then it has to log you in again to get the data for your castle. So then if you plant something, it has to tell the server that you planted it. And then after a certain amount of time, the thing pops up. And then when you click on the button to harvest whatever you planted, then it has to contact the server again to indicate it that, okay, you've harvested it, add this much money, add this much XP to my account, and, you know, and all that. So if you're doing 10 fields, like 10 crops, and you're planting them all at once, that's 10 hits to the server. Everything you do is a hit to the server. So the thing is, not only was it hard to even get into the game, once you get into the game, anything you do could cause it to lose connectivity, and then you're stuck. Basically, exit out and come back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first day was basically unusable. The second day was mostly unusable. After that, it was pretty usable.
There's still some issues with it, though. I still have freeze-ups when you're trying to, you know, communicate with the server at any point during the game. It just freezes up and you wait and you probably exit out and get back in again. But
yeah, I was wondering if I was the only person having that. And the problem is it doesn't tell you.
Yeah,
it just
says
loading, and then you just sit there and it's just loading. I mean, there's no progress bar or anything. Yeah. So there's still some bugs. The bugs seem to be server side. The client seems to be pretty reliable. So that's good. And, you know, server issues are things that they can back, you know, they can upgrade that on the back end. So that's reasonable. That's fine.
Yeah, I guess good problem to have. Too many users, certainly they have to overcome that pretty quickly to, you know, gain some credibility. But
right. Well, and to be fair, all things considered, I think they handled things pretty well. You know, yeah, it was really aggravating for the first day or two, but at the end of the first day, they put up a message in the client saying, you know, we're having some load balancing issues. Just bear with us. Everything will be fine. And, yeah, they took care of it. There are still some odds and ends here and there. But, you know, the game is still getting a lot of people downloading it. And they're still adding a lot of new users. They had over 1 million sessions within 24 hours, which for an iPhone game.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. You know, so, okay, sure. Give them some leniency on the back end and they'll catch up. Now, that being said, I don't get it. My mom is on Facebook, and she used to sit there when she was babysitting my son, and she'd play Farmville. And I'm like, oh, what you playing? Because, you know, normally she'd play things like Chuzzle or Bejeweled or, you know, the various PopCap games. So I was checking this out, and I'm not much of a Facebook guy. So she's like, oh, this is Farmville. I'm like, okay, so what do you do? And she says, well, you click on these squares and you plant crops. And I said, uh-huh. And she said, and then once they grow, they take a while to grow, but they grow on their own. You don't have to stay logged into it. I said, okay, but you pretty much stay logged into it. And she said, well, yeah. I said, okay. So what, you click on the crops and then what happens? And she says, well, you get money and then you can use the money to, you know, buy more crops or like put up a gazebo or a pond or things like that. I'm like, okay. And then what? She's like, well, and you can add your friends. And then if they come and farm your stuff, then you get more money if they do it rather than doing it yourself. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. So then what? And she kind of looked at me funny. She's like, well, what do you mean then what? And I said, well, what's the game? What are you playing? I get that you're clicking on stuff over and over again, but what do you do? How do you play? And she said, well, I just explained it to you. And I said, yeah, okay, so I get the maintenance part of it, but where's the game?
Right.
Like, do you have your cows attack other cows or something? Or is there like a puzzle you have to arrange things in a certain order? Is it are you just saying you just click all day?
That's She's about like, well, it.
But and sometimes I visit other people's farms, but my farm looks really cool because, you know, I got all this stuff, and then when they come to my farm, it looks really awesome. I said, okay.
Well, it's that personal satisfaction. You know, she's doing something she's building, and people can admire it.
Well, she was. Oh, about a month later, she came back and she said, you know, do you have any idea how much of my life I've wasted clicking on these little tiles? I said, yes. Yes, I do.
I try to tell you, Mom.
Yeah. You know, and I understand it. It's addictive. I've been playing it for, we've had it for maybe a week, week and a half. Yep.
Something like that.
And, you know, I'm level, like, I just hit level 15, so yes, I've been playing it, and yes, I've been using the excuse of, well, I got to review it for the podcast as kind of an excuse. It is kind of addictive, but when it gets right down to it, there's not really any type of a game
There's no real goal, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. So if you like that type of thing, it's good. It does seem to be a little bit better than Farmville in the sense that it's not just farming. You can set up little places of business, and other people can come and place orders with you, and you can accept the order, and then after so many hours you click the button to deliver the order to them. If you fail to do it, then neither you nor them loses anything. If you succeed, you both get money and you both get experience points. It's not bad. It's designed pretty well. I don't think I'm going to continue playing it just because I have better things to do. But if you're into this type of game, it's pretty good. On the other hand, tried out Zombie Farm.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet, no.
Yes. That's different because you grow plants and you grow zombies.
Okay.
And then there's a game to it. You take the zombies and you attack neighboring farms. It's not multiplayer, though.
Okay.
That's the sad thing. But
that's what We Rule needs. They need a combat portion of the game.
Exactly.
Build an
army. Zombie Farm
has
that. So you click on the invade button. Once you grow like eight, you have to have a minimum of 8 zombies and a maximum of 16. And there's different types of zombies you can grow. So I tried it today. I clicked invade, and there's a farm over on the right, and it looks kind of like a tower defense thing, and there's the farm owner up on top, and your guys run across the screen, and he's throwing things at them. And so here's how you play it. Your first zombie walks up a little bit, and he gets a little thought bubble above his head, and he thinks of flowers, so you tap it. Like, no, don't think of flowers. And he thinks of ice cream, and you tap the thought bubble. No, don't think of ice cream. And then he thinks of brains, and you tap it. Yes, think of brains. And he runs over to the farm to try to kill people to eat the brains. So basically, your guys line up one by one. You tap them 3 times. Not all at once. You have to wait. Okay, tap, and then wait, tap, and then wait, tap, then wait, and then he runs over. And then you do the next one. That's how you play the game.
Okay.
So as long as you can
tap three times
over the course of like 15 seconds for each zombie you have, you are an awesome game player.
So there's not a lot of skill to it, you're saying.
Yeah, that one's coming off of my iPhone, too.
Now, if they could combine that with Plants vs. Zombie and make it multiplayer.
I know. And the thing is,
that'd be something going there.
I think you hit the nail right on the thumb. That's really what we need. We need because there is an addictive aspect to games like We Rule. And there's obviously a massive audience, a million sessions in a 24-hour period. There's a lot of people that want to play this, and I think a lot more would if there were some type of a game element. You know, let me build up an army, too, and go and fight against other... Combine this with, like, a Mafia Wars type of thing, even. I mean, do something to make it competitive, either player versus player, or even player versus computer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a game in it, and if they would just find a way to add some type of a game element to this, this would be a killer app. And We Rule, you know, the interface is really good.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It's just there's nothing, there's no decisions you need to make, there's no strategy,
right.
You know, no strategy you need to set forth.
Right.
It's just, okay, I planted my crops, I set up my, you know, I forget what even else there is in there, the stone cutting place,
yeah,
and, the, you know, the lumber yard businesses. And so forth, and I'm like, okay, yeah. Now what do I do?
Yeah, it's disappointing. It's encouraging to know that it could be better, and maybe somebody out there will see this and do something with it, and that's awesome. That's encouraging, but until then, I don't know. I'm going to pass, so... well, I guess we kind of have to move on to the iPad now.
Yes, we do.
And talk about all of the cool stuff about it that we can't...
That we don't have yet.
So if you're tired of hearing about the iPad, this first story will maybe give you a little bit of a smile. There were apparently some high school students who waited in line to get an iPad, took it outside from the Apple Store, and set up their video cameras so they could post it on YouTube, and they dropped it on the concrete. And then they picked it up, and they dropped it again, and they took a baseball bat, and they hit it with a baseball bat. And then they passed the bat on to somebody else, and they hit it with a baseball bat. And they just kept taking turns repeatedly beating this poor iPad over and over, just birthed out of the Apple Store.
What did that iPad ever do to them?
Nothing. Oh, the iPad didn't even do anything to itself. To my knowledge, it didn't even get to run. It didn't even get to download its first app. It was...
It's so sad.
Yes, it really is. And when asked why they did it, they said, no, we don't hate Apple. We like Apple. It's just we wanted to do it so we'd be first.
Okay.
What I want to know, do high school kids these days really have, like in this economy... have $500 that they'll go and they'll wait in line for something and basically just throw the $500 away. Just crumple it up or burn it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really?
I don't get it. Did they say where that story was from?
They probably, like, where it happened, what area?
Where the kids are from, was it?
I'm sure it did somewhere. If you do a search on YouTube for iPad, you know what, let me look it up right now.
I don't want to see that.
It's
sad.
It's cute and it's funny, but oh wow, yeah, I'm not sure doing a search for iPad is. Well, there's a Will It Blend, of course, you know, that site that takes everything and puts it in a blender to see whether or not it will blend.
The iPad's kind of big to blend, though, isn't it?
It's kind of funny. I think they broke it down or something because it did, in fact, blend. Wow, yeah, you do a search for iPad on YouTube, and wow, there's just all kinds of stuff on here. You probably have to narrow the search down. I'm not going to do it right now while we're recording, but I don't know. It was just, I saw it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's kind of cute, and it's kind of funny, but I guess for me, $500 is enough money that I cringed not at the fact that it was a cool device getting... destroyed, because I mean, who cares, there's plenty of others, but $500, you know, that's, what else you could have done with that?
Could have done a lot with $500. That's real money.
High school kids, I swear, back in my day,
Walking to school uphill both ways.
Walking to the coin-operated arcade barefoot in the snow. Yeah. And get off my lawn, too. 300,000 iPads sold on the first day.
Very impressive.
That is.
There was a report I saw that said 700,000, but I was like, nah, I can't be right. And Apple released their original one that said 300, so.
Yeah.
That's still very impressive for a device that nobody knows what it's going to do really yet.
Well, you know, the more I'm reading reviews of people who are using it, I'm starting to really see exactly where this is going to fit in. I'm actually getting more and more excited with the device the more I see people using it, the more videos I'm seeing, the more of the apps I'm seeing. A lot of people, of course, were calling it an oversized iPod Touch, and I was one of them. I said, yes, It is an oversized iPod Touch, but it can be useful in these circumstances. And I'm actually going to retract what I said before. I no longer really even see it as an oversized iPod Touch. I mean, it's so much better than that. You've got the ability to plug a keyboard into it, which I can't do with my Touch.
Mm-hmm.
The larger screen, I mean, yeah, it's higher resolution, and yeah, it's bigger. And so obviously bigger means that the things on the screen are bigger, and that's cool. But don't just dismiss the bigger screen as being cooler because it's easier to read things. You can do things with that screen real estate that you can't with other things. For example, well, being able to have a list of your emails on the left while the message is on the right, kind of like you would have on a client on a desktop.
Sure, yeah. The screen real estate makes a huge difference for a lot of these apps that are just kind of awkward to work with on the iPhone or the iPod Touch. But yeah. If you had a 10-inch screen, it's going to be a lot easier to see everything.
A spreadsheet. I've tried to do spreadsheets on an iPod or on an iPod Touch or an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
It works if you have to. But it's not really that, it's not that feasible. It doesn't work. Today, I had class, and no jokes about, oh, you have no class. I had class today, and I forgot my laptop. My whole book bag, all my books, my laptop, even pen and paper, everything. Forgot it, left it at home. Only thing I had was my iPhone. And about 10 minutes into it, I gave up. Thinking I can just take notes on my iPhone, and if I had an iPad, I could totally have taken notes on it. Of course, if I had an iPad, it would have been in my backpack, which I forgot and left at home. But that's not the point. The point is the ability to have extra screen real estate that you can put to good use. It's not just having more; it's what you do with it. Combined with the fact that you can hook up an external keyboard. This is not just merely having an iPod Touch with a really big screen. In my opinion, those two things alone make it worth it.
Mm-hmm. See, I hear what you're saying. I do still think of the iPad as a big iPod Touch, but I don't say that in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a useful device. I think the iPod Touch and the iPhone are useful devices. It would just be that much better with a bigger screen. The external keyboard is nice. I don't think it's a deal killer for me. If it didn't have one, I wouldn't not want one. But
sure,
just the bigger screen real estate. We're saying the same thing, even though we're calling it two different things. But I don't think it is more than an iPod Touch because it's not a laptop. It's not something you're going to do production on.
You're
not
going right.
to build big documents. You're not going to build videos. It's just going to be something you're going to see stuff on and use to organize things, I guess.
I guess you're right in the sense that it's more, it's less restrictive than an iPod Touch. There's inherently more that you're able to do with it just based on the changes in physical characteristics and the design of the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, it is much more than merely an oversized iPod Touch. But you are correct. I will concede that at its nature, it is an oversized iPod Touch. I think it's just if you have that mentality about it, I fear you'll be missing some things that I feel like you wouldn't be thinking outside the box enough with what this could really do. And I'm not saying you specifically. I'm just saying in general people who have been dismissive about it. There was a great tweet from the guys over at iPad Pundit. Andy Anatko and I think it's Alex Lindsay.
Yep.
I always get Alex Lindsay and Scott Bourne confused, but it's two of the guys that do a lot of the Twit podcasts and MacBreak Weekly and stuff like that. And one of them was saying something like, I hate pizza. It's greasy. It's bad for you. It's not good. There's no reason to have pizza. I've never had pizza, but I've never seen it, but I know people who have had pizza and you should just stay away from it. It's bad. I hate it.
Yeah. So that was very funny.
I'm kind of like, yeah, well, you know, they kind of did hit it. Anyway, I don't want to be too preachy about it. Actually, there are some problems with it. And let's talk about that. We've talked before about the reasons we are excited about the iPad. Let's talk about some problems that are creeping up a little bit now. First off, the prices for the apps are a little on the high side.
Yeah, they're certainly not the iPhone app pricing.
No. Now, to clarify a little bit of education for people here, there are two different ways you can do an iPad app. You can make it exclusive to the iPad, which are a lot of the HD. Like if you have Dungeon Hunter HD, then that's the iPad version as opposed to Dungeon Hunter, which is for the iPhone. The other way you can do it is to have what's called a universal app. So if you get, for example, the Marvel Comics application is a universal app. It's free, and you can download it, and if you have an iPhone, it will work on the iPhone. But if you have an iPad, it will work on the iPad as well. But it's not like if you run an iPhone application on the iPad. Okay, so you don't have to worry about the fact that it's small or you're doing the pixel doubling if you zoom in on it. This is an actual native resolution for the iPad application. Another example of a universal app, Evernote, which I think we discussed back on our productivity podcast episode.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so there's a universal version of that too. And it's not just that it's native resolution on the iPad, but you've actually got different functionality on it. You've got some extra features added. So universal apps, if you buy it for the iPhone, you get it free for the iPad too. 1Password is another one, a very popular password management software. If you have it for the iPhone, you don't have to buy it new for the iPad. All you have to do is just update your iPhone version like you normally would if there's a software update, and you will now have the universal version.
Nice.
So, but there are a lot of games, unfortunately, some very popular ones that I plan to get, that not only do you have to pay for them again, like Plants vs. Zombies is, I think, it's either $7.99 or it's $9.99.
I think I saw it as $9.99.
Yeah, and I already paid $4.99 for it, and I don't regret it. It's a good game, and the iPad version will have the mini games that were available on the Windows and Mac versions. So that's kind of nice, too. I kind of feel like...
It feels like they're milking you for it, you know? It's like, I've already bought it once. Do I need to buy it again?
And it's not their fault. You know, the developers, it's not their fault that Apple doesn't allow them a way to upgrade from within the app. That's really what I would like, is I would like a way where they can make it so that if I pay an extra $5 to make up the difference...
Sure.
You know, and then I would have like a universal type of an app or something. That would be very cool.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense to be able to buy it. I have it for the iPhone, pay a few bucks more to get the other version, so I have both versions now, but...
Yeah.
There's been some pain in the near future for people wanting to upgrade.
I think there's a way they can make it work. There's a program out there called Documents to Go, and there's a basic version and a pro version. And if you have the basic version, which I think was $9.99... and the pro version is $15, $14.99. There is a way that from within the application you can upgrade, which if you do a lot of document work, Microsoft Word or Excel, then it's a good application. I mean, it's one of the, up until the iPad release and now that Pages and Numbers and all the iWork stuff has come out, this was one of the better Word and Excel editors out there. But the pro version, they added the functionality to sync with Google Docs, which I kind of like because we do our show notes in Google Docs, so then I didn't have to be at the desktop to update the show notes. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay an additional $15 to get it, so I gave up on it. And about 3 or 4 days later, they said, but wait, you can upgrade from within the app.
Yeah, that's a nice way to do it.
Yeah, but it's the only app I've seen that does it that way. So I'm hoping that maybe some of these iPad games will find a way to do that somehow.
Yeah, I think some of this stuff's going to get sorted out over the next couple of months, because this is brand new to everybody. So,
yeah. $9.99 unfortunately seems to be a pretty popular price point. And I think a lot of people are going to be upset about having to buy things twice. And I don't know. I think that as a result, we'll probably see prices drop. But we'll see. Another issue with the iPad is a lot of people are aware of the fact that it comes with, I believe it's a 10-volt charging cable. So if you buy an iPhone, you have a sync cable, right, with USB at the other end. Mm-hmm. And then you have, way back in the day, it used to come with those big bricks, like what you'd get with a MacBook. And you'd plug the USB into that. Well, when the 3GS came out, they had a much smaller USB plug for the wall that you'd plug your USB cable into and charge it from your wall outlet. But the iPad has the much bigger brick to it, and there's a good reason for that. It actually takes more power to charge than the iPhone. And according to Andy Anatko for the Chicago Sun-Times and MacBreak Weekly and a bunch of other podcasts, he's one of the people who was, they were fortunate enough to get early review copies of the iPad, and he got his, and he was talking about the battery life a little bit and the charging time. And he said that it takes about twice as long to charge on USB as it does on a wall outlet. Something he didn't point out, but that has been released since then, is that he must have been charging it on his iMac or on a MacBook, because those are the only two places reported to work.
Huh.
And it's not so much that it's an Apple thing. It's just that other USB ports just don't have the power.
Huh.
So, USB hubs will not work unless they are powered USB hubs, and then they might and they might not. Most Windows computers that have been tested, from what people are reporting on the internet, will not work. The MacBook, MacBook Pro, and iMac should all work, though I've heard that on the MacBooks, especially the earlier ones, there are two USB ports on the left, like on the old white plastic-style MacBooks. And one of the two also has other things that are running off of that USB hub, or off of that USB bus. So, in other words, it's not that it slows down the USB connection, but there are other internal devices that are kind of piggybacking off of that USB bus. So one port is, how do I explain it, is cleaner than the other. And so there are some people who are saying that it depends on which port you plug it into on the older MacBooks. I don't know if that's true or not. That's anecdotal. But that's another issue that's come up. Car chargers is another thing. You know, some car chargers supply more power to the USB plug than others do. So I don't know.
It's going to be sorted out, because it's going to make a lot of people unhappy if they can't charge it by plugging into their computer.
Yeah.
Especially if you forgot your brick at home and you have your computer at work, and now what are you going to do?
Well, and the thing is, if you have a dock at your computer, that's great. But if you have to plug it into the wall to charge it, then you can just charge it and not sync it. Or you can plug it into the computer and sync it but not charge it.
That kind of defeats the purpose.
And I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that Apple didn't take this into consideration. I mean, sure, they make Macs and they don't make Windows machines, but the reality of it is they've still only got a small portion of the overall PC market.
Well, you know what the solution is. Buy a Mac.
Buy a Mac, sure. Yeah, I'm going to go buy the 27-inch iMac.
Come on, buy a Mac too.
Yeah, right. Kind of an expensive charging solution, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
There's also been a lot of reports of Wi-Fi issues.
There have been.
And that's, you know, it's funny because when the 3G came out, it was the new design with the plastic back on it. And a lot of people speculated that was to give it better, you know, reception. And when I saw the iPad, I'm like, it's got the same kind of metal back as the first iPod or the first iPhone did.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing maybe these issues are related. I don't know.
Well, people are saying that, is it iFixed Wi-Fi.com. There's a website that took one apart, and it was determined apparently that the Wi-Fi antenna is behind the black plastic Apple logo on the back of the iPad. And apparently that's similar to where it is on an iMac.
Okay.
Now, people are pointing out that the difference is on the iMac, you don't have that logo sitting face down on your lap or on a table or behind a case or, you know, through some other obstruction of some sort. So it's not as impeded as it is on an iMac. So the good news is for those of us who held out for the 3G model, allegedly there's going to be a strip of plastic on the back that's going to allow better reception for the 3G antenna. And that would also, therefore, allow better reception for the Wi-Fi. So, ironically, if you buy the 3G version, you will get better Wi-Fi connectivity, perhaps. It just seems silly. How do they miss this?
Yeah, it seems like a very simple thing they would have caught.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not that you don't get any Wi-Fi. It's just that people are reporting that they have fewer Wi-Fi bars. Yeah.
Yeah. See, and, you know, I read these things. Actually, I saw the first reports of the charging issues and the Wi-Fi issues this morning, and I thought, okay, I'm kind of glad I'm waiting for version 2. So I actually vindicated myself, maybe.
There you go.
I'm looking on the bright side here.
Yeah, you know, that's always a hard decision, and especially with Apple, because Apple tends to have a very tight product line, and they update it annually. So it's always hard to tell, you know, when do you buy something? Leo Laporte used to always joke about the fact that, well, you know, anytime we need an update to the new MacBook line, I'll just go buy a MacBook, because inevitably 2 weeks later, there'll be some new model. And it's hard, because do you get it now or do you wait for the next version? And if you keep waiting for the next version, you never get anything.
Right. You got to make the decision to just do it at some point.
But. Right. But you're correct. I mean, you know, version 1.0.
Yeah, the way I looked at it with this one, and I know we're not talking about this kind of stuff right now, but the way I looked at it with the iPad is I'm thinking to myself, well, it is version 1. It's a brand new category of device, so people don't really know how or what it's going to be used for. I figure after a year, Apple will have a better idea of what the consumers want, and we'll have a better idea of what we're telling Apple we want. So hopefully, you know, maybe it's a camera in the next iPad, maybe it's a different screen resolution, maybe it's, you know, better Wi-Fi, you know, but that's the kind of thing I'm thinking, that after this first year settles out, apps will be a little more mature, and the device will be more mature, hopefully. So,
yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that makes it hard, but...
In the meantime, I'll be envious that you have one and I don't.
Well, I mean, the reality is, you're probably right. If you think back to the original iPod, a lot of people don't even remember it, but it had a physical wheel on it. It was not a touch-sensitive wheel. It was a physical wheel with a little notch to put your finger in, and the entire piece of plastic rotated. Look at the original iPhone. You couldn't put any apps on it. It was just locked into...
It was just that, and they thought web apps were going to be the way to go.
And so,
that changed quite a bit, so I'm hoping.
Yeah, you know, you're crying now, but a year from now, you'll be laughing and I'll be crying, so it's all good.
We'll see.
Yeah, the only other thing that people are complaining a little bit about, and honestly, people knew about this from the beginning, this isn't really news, is that if you try to run iPhone apps on it, it's... People are saying it's too small to be useful. Of course, you know, it's the same size as it is on your iPhone when it's the small size. So, it's still usable. I really don't want to hear it. If it's good enough on your iPhone and it's big enough on your iPhone, it's the same size on the iPad. It just, you have extra black space that you don't know what to do with.
You know, I think that's the same mentality people had with the old, you know, 4x3 TVs that would get a letterbox version of a movie and thought they were missing something. I think it's the same thing.
Or the worst thing is, like I said earlier in this show, I used to do AV stuff and control system programming and stuff like that. And anytime we would put a widescreen plasma or LCD television in, and that's basically all that's been sold for a long time now, is the widescreen 16:9 aspect ratio televisions. And the first thing they do after we get the install done is they turn it to CNN, and they look at it funny, and they're like, well, there's these black boxes on the side of the screen. And we're like, well, yeah. And they're like, well, hold on a second, and they mess with the menu, and they get it to stretch, and they're like, that's better.
And it looks horrible.
Like, no, it's not better. Everybody on the TV just gained 100 pounds. Everything's all stretched out. Yeah, I don't know. I understand why they do it, because they feel like there should be... their excuse are so funny. Oh, well, I paid that extra money to have the wider TV. I want it to be used.
I want to fill it up, yeah.
So you're losing money if you don't stretch it. Okay. But it's the same thing. I understand. If you're putting an iPhone app on an iPad, it seems silly not to double the resolution. If you double the pixels by hitting the button on the bottom, a lot of them are going to look so pixelated as to be very yucky. Mm. And you're not going to want to use them. And that's fine. There are a lot, though, that people are saying don't look that bad. I imagine that what it is that a lot of the text probably does not look very good, and a lot of the games might be passable, depending on the game. So, I don't know. But that's not really the point. You don't buy an iPad to put iPhone games on it anyway. So that's kind of a, you know, can you really complain about it when at least they're giving you the ability to run your old apps on it if you want to? I mean, would you rather just not have the backwards compatibility?
Right. I think it's good you still get to play them or still get to use that app if you paid for it or downloaded it. But
right,
you're going to deal with it.
Yeah. So that's a lot of negative stuff. But, you know, the high prices, I think, will come down. Charging issues, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot they can do about that, honestly. I think that's something that we as consumers are going to have to adapt to until the version 2.0 comes out next year, and then Lou will have one he can charge on anything while I'm tethered to the wall.
Wirelessly through the air, yes, it'd be great.
Yeah, oh, yeah, if they did conduction charging. Or, yeah. Wi-Fi issues, I don't know what they'll do with that yet. We'll see. But otherwise, honestly, people have been pretty happy about it. There have been several reviewers who have said, you know, I really didn't think I was going to like this thing, and I love it. So that's encouraging.
That's great.
Yeah. So generally, very positive reviews. A lot of people are calling this the device that we didn't realize we wanted. Andy Anatko, for example, has even gone so far as to say that while it's not as revolutionary, he feels like there will be a time 5 or 6 years from now where we will not remember what it was like to not have this type of device, in the same way that people now don't remember what it was like to operate a computer without a mouse.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, that's kind of that's a risky thing to say. But,
well, it'd be interesting, I think, to see what happens, you know, in the next, say, 3 to 5 years, what Apple does with this technology. Do they roll this into the rest of the Mac lineup? Do you start using your iMac without a mouse, but touchscreen interface there too?
Funny you should mention that. There is an app, and I don't have this in the show notes, so correct me if I get any of the details wrong, our dear listeners out there. But there's an app, I believe it's called iDisplay, and it will extend your Macintosh monitor onto the iPad, and will still retain the touch. The touch ability of it. I don't know exactly how that would end up working out, but if you had a dock there at your desk and you did a lot of desk work with it, you can use it to extend your monitor. And I'm sure that in some upcoming version of the software, they will let you use it as some type of a tablet mouse, like a touchpad, but with visual feedback.
Yeah, like a Wacom tablet or the Cintiq. I think they call it the monitor where you can actually use the Wacom pen right on it.
Exactly.
Yep.
I mean, people have been talking about that type of use for it way, way, way back when, before Apple even announced that they were actually going to do it.
Sure.
So it's just a matter of time before I'm sure there's some third-party application developer out there right now, as you and I are talking right this very minute, working on it.
You think they stole our idea?
They might have. I'll have to hunt them down. Let's talk about a little bit about some of the apps that have been released, and then maybe we can wrap up the show with our picks.
Sure.
There's like 3,000 apps available now.
Is there really? That's impressive for 2 or 3 days into it.
I know. Like we said, there's a good mix of universal apps with the iPad-specific apps. There's a good mix of free apps along with paid apps. So where do you want to start?
Well, I think the most exciting things coming out for this device are all the video streaming devices coming out.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, not to take away from the iPad, but I think some of the things that intrigue me the most are, there's been talk about streaming stuff onto the iPhone now also.
Yes.
Which makes me happy.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest things is some of the software that's coming out for the iPad, if it doesn't exist on the iPhone, let's bring it back. You know, let's bring it back down to the iPhone device too. I mean, if it can run on one, it should run on the other, unless there's a hardware limitation.
Yeah, I mean, I know the iPad's more powerful, but at some point, like, you know, streaming shouldn't be able to be done on the iPhone, because we do it now, right, with, you know, YouTube and so forth.
Exactly.
But, you know, the long rumored Hulu coming to a mobile device is now coming out on the iPad.
Yeah, well, apparently Hulu is being worked on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not out yet, but they've been saying they were working on an iPhone app for a long time, but all of a sudden there seems to be more substantial rumors this time around that a Hulu app is coming. Apparently they're just trying to work out content licensing issues with the networks. And of course, Hulu is partially owned by NBC. And is it Fox?
It's one of the networks. I can't remember which one other than NBC.
Yeah, there are two networks I thought that jointly owned it. And I know NBC is one of them. But and NBC, interestingly enough, was going to, according to the New York Times, had an iPad app ready to go for streaming. And then they pulled out.
Huh.
Now, is this because they're partial owners of Hulu? Because one of the rumors is that they're going to do a Hulu app that is going to be subscription-based. Whether or not the website is or not, the iPad app itself will have some sort of a subscription model built into it.
And that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think we can expect everything to be free streaming on the internet forever.
Well, here's the thing, though. If they're going to keep putting ads in the content, people aren't going to be willing to pay very much for subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to balance that very carefully. Fortunately, in the meantime, Netflix, if you are a Netflix subscriber, then all of your Instant Watch stuff is going to be available for free on the iPad.
Yay.
It's already out. They have confirmed that they are also working on an iPhone app. So, already released for the iPad, coming soon for the iPhone. It's free if you are a Netflix subscriber. So, there you go. And apparently, the interface apparently is not all that pretty. It's not wonderful. It doesn't look all spiffy. It's pretty basic, but it's very functional. And the most important thing is that people say the video is clear as day. It's awesome.
That's fantastic. I mean, yeah. I know on the computer, the Netflix app is pretty crystal clear.
Yeah. So that's very, very, very good news. Of all of the things I saw coming out, I mean, I'm pretty psyched about Plants vs. Zombies and some other things, but seeing that they had a confirmed, you know, it was announced on April 1st, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And I forwarded the news article to some people, and I thought, oh, man, I bet this is an April Fool's joke. And then later on that day, when people are like, yeah, and here's the link, and every time I clicked on the link, it didn't work to the iTunes store. I'm like, man, don't tell me this is a joke. That's not even funny. But no, it is here, and that is awesome. ABC also has a streaming app. So Lost fans like Lou and I will get to watch Lost on our iPad, and we don't have to download it from iTunes. We can just go to the ABC app and get it there. Now, apparently they do put some ads in there. And the interface for the ABC application apparently is very nice. They've done quite a bit of kind of putting some thought into how they design the user interface, and people really like it. So,
and seeing the ads would be the same as watching on ABC.com.
Yeah.
Which, well, I'll still have to do because I won't have an iPad. Thanks for mentioning that.
Well, next year when Lost is no longer on, you can go back and watch. I don't know. Well, yeah, but you know, it's no different from watching it on the website in the sense that you have some ads, or it's not that much different from watching it on your television, except the ads are shorter.
Yeah, exactly.
So, MLBTV.com is owned by CBS, the last of the networks for us to speak of, because NBC doesn't have one, Fox doesn't have one, but CBS kind of does, sort of. There's the iPhone app for TV.com, but there's no iPad version.
I got to think they're working on that, though. I mean,
They got to be.
I mean, TV is in such a state of flux right now with you know,
yeah,
all this stuff online. I don't know how much longer their business model is going to sustain itself with, you know, broadcast television.
Yeah, well, and you know what it is it's the middleman. Mm-hmm. It's the cable providers.
Cable networks, yeah.
It's Cox and Comcast and DirecTV. I mean, they're the ones that really are going to be losing out. They pay NBC and CBS and ABC and Fox and all of the other various networks. They pay them lots of money. So I think the networks are worried that if they have to go directly to the consumer and they don't have that middleman that is provides them a certain level of consistency and reliability, I think that and some risk mitigation, too, I think. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that particular business model, and I don't know. I don't claim to know all of the details, but I think that really it's that the studios don't want to see Cox and Comcast and all them go away because they are such a big part of their revenue model. That I mean, look how nervous they've been to get into web broadcasting and iTunes, and you know, NBC mm-hmm. pulled out, and
yeah,
then they went back in.
Hulu, yep.
Right.
And now, doesn't Comcast own NBC?
Yeah, I think they do. And that's the other thing, is that they're in bed with each other now. Like, literally. Like, one is bought, well, not literally in the sense that they are in a bed with sheets over them, but they have bought out some of these networks now, and it's kind of like, isn't that kind of a conflict of interest?
Yeah, I mean, you're creating it and you're distributing it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not an expert on that stuff, but it just seems a little wishy-washy.
Yeah, big changes coming up.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, for right now, you know, we've got half of the networks able to be streamed through an iPhone or iPad device, and we've got Netflix. So really all we're missing are Fox and NBC, and we'll have all of the primary networks. And then if we could also get Hulu in there, because Hulu has a little bit of everything, that would be awesome. The other big thing that, I mean, games are a big thing. We'll get to games in a few minutes. But book readers, a lot of people have been talking about that. And, of course, there have been a lot of magazine apps, Wall Street Journal and stuff like that, that I'm not going to get into too much. But as far as ebooks go, the iBook that comes with it, people are saying it's absolutely gorgeous. It's responsive. It's easy to read. It does color display. It comes with the Winnie the Pooh, the original Winnie the Pooh storybook by, what's the guy's name? Last name's Milne, I think. M-I-L-N-E?
Yes.
Yeah.
A.A. Milne?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're more literate than I am, probably.
I wouldn't go that far.
So it comes with the original Winnie the Pooh story with color illustrations in the book. You can turn it landscape mode and see two pages at a time. You can turn it in portrait mode. The pages flip really well. The contrast is good. Everybody is saying that this is just simply one of the best book readers out there. If you don't like the iBook application and you prefer the Kindle application, there's an app for that. They have released the universal app for Kindle. So if you already have it for your iPhone, all you got to do is just sync up the universal version and you will get it with your iPad as well. And I don't think it does landscape view, so that's a downside. But one benefit is the Whisper Sync means that if you have books for the Kindle, you can look at them both on your iPhone and your iPad, and it will synchronize where you left off.
Yeah, that's always a nice feature. I mean, I haven't done too much with the Kindle stuff on my iPhone, but it is nice to be able to, I got 5 minutes, I can read something. Let me pick up where I left off at home last night. So
right. Because really, the iPhone is not a bad ebook reader.
Other than the size of the screen, it's not bad, yeah.
Sure, but, you know, the size of the text is okay. It is a little bit different paradigm for reading books, and I understand that. I have been reading ebooks on portable devices, you know, Palm Pilots and Windows mobile phones and stuff like that for literally years now, probably close to a decade, or at least it feels that way. Mm. It does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's really not that bad. And if you are an avid reader, you should at least consider doing it. And with the Kindle application, you can synchronize between the two devices and, and your Mac now, if you have a Mac, and there's also the Windows desktop application. So if you wanted to, I'm not really into reading ebooks on a desktop, but if you wanted to, all of those things will be in sync. The iBook application is not available for an iPhone. So you don't have that functionality with it. So something to keep in mind. Comic books are, I think comic books on the iPad are awesome.
I think it's going to be great for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the right size. Comics? It has color. It has everything you want.
Yeah. Nice crisp display. Were you ever into comics as a kid or teenager or college student?
Yep. Teenager, college student, definitely.
Yeah, I was too. I'm not now, but I kind of miss it. And the thing is, I've been reading comics on the iPhone for a while now, and a lot of people didn't realize they're even out there. And obviously, you can't really read an entire page at once, but there are readers out there where if you take your iPhone and turn it sideways, then it will go panel by panel throughout the individual pages. And you might be wondering, well, does that really work that well? And what if the panel is kind of vertical? They compensate for that. I won't explain how. Just if you're interested, download one of the free applications, and they have free comic books within the applications that you can download. Because this is for the iPhone too, I'm going to run down this a little bit. Maybe we'll do an episode where we talk a little bit more about comics. For the iPhone. Maybe we'll get Joe from over on the Lost Chatter Show to come in. I think he's kind of a comic book nut, too.
Yeah, he's big into comics.
Yeah. There are the three big players in the iPhone comic book apps are Panelfly, which is very popular, probably the most popular. I don't like the interface. I think that the way they have it set up to browse for comics is a little clunky, but so that's out there. There's IDW, and there is Comixology. That's Comixology. My favorite is Comixology. They have a pretty good blend of pretty much every publisher out there. Dark Horse, Image, a lot of independent stuff, and they also have Marvel. DC Comics, Superman, Batman, etc., are not to be found anywhere. So
they just don't get it.
They don't get it. I hope they get it soon. I'm kind of a big Batman fan. But we'll see. Marvel, though, is... And the thing is, all of the preview iPads came preloaded with applications. And Marvel Comics was one of those applications that came on the iPad that people got to preview. And so there's been a lot of talk about it. And I'm kind of happy about that. The Marvel Comics app uses the Comixology engine. So it's basically the Comixology app, but with only Marvel Comics in it.
Does it do anything different than what Comixology? Okay.
So no, it works their exactly.
app with only Marvel.
Exactly. Nice. They skinned it for Marvel, and you can only access Marvel Comics. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, I have not gone through title by title to find out if they have exactly the same content. I believe they have exactly the same content. So, if you were to go the Comixology route instead, you would not be missing anything out. Quite the contrary, you would have more comics available to you. Now, if you don't want all the noise of the other publishers, and you know you only want Marvel Comics, then you could just use the Marvel Comics app. So, it's up to you. Either one, I don't know if the Comixology app is available for the iPad yet, but if not, you know, any day now. They've already announced that it's coming. If it's not here yet, just don't worry, it'll show up. They are universal apps. IDW, I'm not sure if that's on the iPad yet or not. I believe it is, and they also have the G.I. Joe comics, both the classic ones and the more modern, more adult ones, and same for Transformers. They have the old ones and the more modern ones, both based on the movies and based on the original, you know, more modern stories with the original characters in them. You can get each of those as individual apps. You can get a Transformers comic app and a G.I. Joe comic app where you can browse just those series, or you can get the IDW app. I would go with the one that gives you more and only takes up one icon in your device. So now here's the catch. The apps themselves are free, but the comic issues are generally about $1.99. And that has led to some negative reviews from some people. Most people are still giving it pretty positive reviews, but some people are a little cranky about the $1.99 per issue.
Now, I haven't bought comics in a while. How does that compare to what you'd pay for a paper edition?
You know, that's a good question.
I always ask the good ones.
Well, let's see here.
You know, while you're looking, I guess it's one thing to complain about the price of the individual, you know, editions you're buying, but I don't see where people think we're going to have all this free content forever and ever and ever. It just doesn't make sense. It can't be sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. People have to produce the content. Well, it's anything. Movies, music, writing, you know, books. It's great to get some free samples and stuff like that, and ensure it does promote the artist. But
sure, I mean, especially the independent titles. I mean, nobody knows them. If, you know, it's a great way to learn and pick up on something you might want to read. But you can't expect, you know, Marvel to give away their, you know, brand name for nothing.
Well, these people have careers out of this. I mean, this is how they get paid. How would you like to show up for work every day, and your boss just expects you to do it for free?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're like, no, the answer would be, well, yeah, but people kind of expect you to get what you're doing for free. So how about we just not pay you? I mean, you know, it's nice. The whole information wants to be free thing. I understand the concept behind it. But the reality is that information, if it's news, that's kind of one thing.
Yeah.
You've got journalists who have to collect the news.
Mm-hmm.
But. Yeah, there's a difference.
There's a difference between information and entertainment.
Creative content.
Right.
Yeah, big time.
I really hope the iPad is the stepping stone for what the comics need to move into, because, face it, there has not been a good way to get comics electronically.
No.
At all.
No. Well, I just looked, and it looks like the average comic book issue in paper is about $2.99.
Okay, so you're still getting a break.
If you collect comics, this is actually a financial benefit to you. This is cheaper. And some people will want the physical comic books, and that's fine. I don't begrudge you that at all. And same for books. That's cool. I totally understand that. If you want electronic copies of it, though, $1.99 is not bad. Older comics are generally 99 cents. And that's not bad. The only thing to keep in mind, though, is that especially with the Marvel titles, there's a limited selection. It's a pretty good selection. I mean, keep in mind, Marvel's just testing the water with this. They're still not fully convinced that this is a good way to go. So this is a test for them. But they've got X-Men. They've got Iron Man. They've got Spider-Man. They've got the Hulk. They've got some recent miniseries. They've got the Civil War miniseries. They've got the House of M. They've got World War Hulk. Most of the comics I've been seeing for Marvel seem to be from the 2004 to 2007 range. They've got the Joss Whedon run of X-Men. Joss Whedon being the guy that did Buffy and Firefly and stuff like that. So it's not bad. And really, I've been pretty impressed with what they've been able to do with the limited screen size on the iPhone. And the videos I've been watching of the iPad with comics is just absolutely incredible. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Awesome. Let's see, what else do we have? Twitter clients, of course, people love to tweet on their iPhones. And I'm a little lazy when it comes to Twitter. I need to get a little bit better about that. I'm working on it. The two that are the most popular from what I can see are TweetDeck seems to be popular with people who have a lot of people that they follow, because it's very easy to split it up into different columns. If you've used the desktop client for TweetDeck at all, where you get multiple columns for different lists or different groups, then you're pretty much familiar with how it's going to operate on the iPad. So if you need to categorize the people you follow, that's a good way to go. If not, Twitterific seems to have the most compelling interface from what I've seen. And a lot of people are migrating toward that. I was expecting Tweety.
I'm surprised because they've had a big redesign on the iPhone.
Yeah. And really, Tweety is the, from what I can tell, I haven't seen numbers, but it's just anecdotally, Tweety is like the Twitter app for the iPhone. Most people I've talked to seem to use it. So yeah.
I recently switched to it from TweetDeck, but I like that functionality in TweetDeck had of separating things by columns.
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to get used to it without that.
I follow a bunch of Lost Twitterers. I follow a lot of entertainment news stuff. And then, you know, I follow people like, you know, you and Brian over at Tech Chatter and, you know, friends I've met online from gaming and stuff. So there's the people I care about what's going on in their lives. And then there's more like news related, you know, breaking news things. And then there's mm-hmm. like iPad news and stuff. Well, sometimes I just want to see what's going on with my friends because I only have a few minutes and everything else seems like spam at that moment. So I like having them separated. Tweety too on the iPhone for me, they support lists now. And I thought, oh, that's awesome. So I tried it out and I don't like the fact that you have to jump through so many hoops to get to the lists.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward.
Yeah, with TweetDeck, all you have to do is just swipe left or right. And it shifts columns, and that's awesome. Now, Twitterific on the iPad, it looks like you can have the lists listed, no pun intended, over on the left side. And then you have the actual tweets themselves on the right side. So that looks like it might be the way to go. I'll have to try that out.
I'm just wondering how much use these apps are going to get in the iPad versus the iPhone, assuming somebody has both. Because to me, I think of a Twitter client. I'm on the go. I've got my iPhone. I've got a couple minutes to pull it out and scan through it. It seems easier on an iPhone device than a bigger iPad that you got to pull out and sit down with. And
yeah, well, I think what you said earlier, you really hit on it, is that this is a new device, and we can guess at how we're going to use it, but we don't know yet until we start using it. So I think that you're right. Over the next year, even the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to start seeing how that's going to come across. Now, I know for me personally, this is going to be basically a laptop replacement. I know it cannot do everything a laptop can do. I've come to terms with that. I can't podcast on it. I can't really do photo editing on it. I couldn't do video production on it, but I don't really do photo editing and video production on it. On my laptop that much anyway. And podcasting, I always do with I've got kind of a semi-pro rig here at my desk. So I don't really podcast mobily anyway. So for me, it's a replacement laptop, and I'm going to be carrying it around the house with me and sitting on the couch with it while, you know, I'm taking care of my son. If I travel, I'm going to travel with this and probably leave my MacBook at home. But my phone, if I'm running around town, I'm still going to have my phone with me. And I still might want to, you know, look at emails or tweet or things like that. So my iPhone is going to be left in the dust. But right now, my iPhone is my primary computing device, and that's going to stop. So
right, but when you're out and about, probably, you know, I'm not trying to tell you how to use your devices, but when you're out and about just for, you know, 20 minutes to go to the store, the iPhone's going to be with you and the iPad.
Exactly.
More than
exactly.
Likely.
No, you're absolutely right. And even beyond that, if I go out for half the day to go to the mall or something, if I'm running errands, I'm just simply not carrying something that big around with me.
Exactly.
So if I'm going to go to, if for some reason I'm going to go to a restaurant by myself to kill time and, you know, I'm not socializing with anybody, so it's not going to be rude, then I take it. If I'm going to go to Panera or a coffee shop, I'm going to take it with me. If I'm going to school, this is going to be what I take notes on in school. I'm going to have this in a little portable dock just to sit it upright, and I'm going to have the Bluetooth keyboard, and that's how I'm taking notes. It's lighter than a laptop. It's easier to use. It's smaller and more portable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, but no, I don't think people are going to replace their iPhone with this. And I think it is going to cause a lot of confusion. It's going to cause some, people aren't really going to know, well, you know, do how much am I duplicating my efforts here, and is it really worth it? And I think a lot of developers are going to need to keep that in mind. I think that for the consumers, it's going to come naturally. They're going to use what they use. It's the developers who have to keep up with the consumers, and that is really going to be where we see winners versus losers. It's going to be developers who understand the needs for universal apps. You know, high-resolution games, I get it. There are some games that are just going to work better on the iPad than the iPhone. Okay.
Yeah, and there's going to be some apps that they're only going to make for the iPad, which I can see. But sure. I think anything they make for the iPhone should be universal.
Yeah. I think universal
apps...
That's
kind of how I'm looking at it.
I agree with you completely. I think universal apps are really where it's going to be. Because people don't want to have to think about which apps do I have in which device. It's got to be seamless. And that's one reason why I think as much as the iBooks application looks awesome, that's an example where for some people, Kindle is going to win out just because of that Whisper Sync feature. Not everybody. Now, like you said, a lot of people don't want to read books on their phone, but that's an example. There are going to be a lot of other things where, Twitter clients. With TweetDeck, one nice thing about it is that you can synchronize with the server and it keeps track of like what your lists are and what columns you have set up. And you don't have to think about it. If you make a change on one or on your desktop, it syncs it. Games like We Rule, the Farmville game we were talking about earlier, you log into a plus account. If you're on your iPad, you've got all of your data just like you would on your iPhone. You make a change on one, it updates the other. That's the way to go. The comic book applications, for example, all of that stuff is stored on the cloud. You create an account. It's paid for through your iTunes account when you make purchases, but you can download the comic books from their servers at any time. So you can always have the same things on both devices. But I think that's a really good point, is that that's something that developers are going to have to take into consideration. So anyway... I guess maybe we've rambled about this enough. There's a bunch of games out there. The one thing I want to point out real quick that I think is awesome. I want to talk about Plants vs. Zombies. I want to talk about Field Runners because it's one of my favorite games. But really, the one thing that I'm excited about is Scrabble. And
that looks really cool.
It does. I just started playing Words with Friends, which is an iPhone Scrabble client that it's kind of like Scrabulous from Facebook used to be, where you can play against other people. And the thing is, I suck at Scrabble. I really do. I still haven't won a game yet, not a single game on Words with Friends. I am just not a Scrabble player. But what excites me about Scrabble is the fact that there's this one feature that's awesome. And that is, if you have multiple people sitting around playing a game on the one iPad. So let's say you put it in your dock at like the dining room table or something like that, and you have a couple of people there. If they have iPhones or iPod touches, there is a helper app that you can download where it has your tiles on the iPhone so nobody else can see your tiles. So when you want to play tiles, you take your finger and you flick them off of your iPhone, onto the iPad.
That's just so cool.
Then you arrange them. How awesome is that? You know, the ultimate killer app for this, and it's not out that I know of, if they could do a Texas Hold'em, dude, that would be awesome.
And you know what's coming? If they do this with Scrabble, you know card games can't be far behind.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, having... You could have an iPad at a table, and you could have you and your wife with your iPhones and your own hands of cards, and you could also maybe simultaneously be playing multiplayer over the internet against like one or two other people, and you could have, and it would be cool if you could do like a chat thing, like a Skype thing across the two at the same time, so it's almost like you're in the same room with the people, and have like a little poker night without actually having people physically there, because you know you'd have some people there, but they wouldn't have to be. That would be awesome.
It'd be fantastic. The only thing you got to worry about is spilling the beer on the iPad.
Well, you know, the thing is, if beer does get spilled on the iPad, you can't blame your buddy. It's true. Your own fault.
True.
But, you know, seriously, though, that's a great... I think card games in general would be a great function for that, because a lot of people who have iPads do have either iPhones or iPod touches. And like we have, my wife had an old iPod Touch that now that we both have iPhones, it's just sitting around. If we had another person over, we could lend them the iPod Touch if they didn't have one. And there you go. I think Texas Hold'em would be awesome.
I think that's a winner.
All right. Well, man, I still got 3 weeks left. I know you have no sympathy. I'm talking to the wrong person about this. I know. I'll shut up.
I'm hoping by some chance they announce version 2 before Christmas, but I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, this iPhone 4.0 operating system, that's the operating system for the iPad. There could be changes coming in it.
It could be.
And keep in mind, you know, yes, this is a version 1.0 device, but it's running an operating system.
That's been around for 3 years now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, hardware-wise, yeah, it's first gen, but is it really first gen?
It's going to be hard. We'll see if I can hold out the year.
We'll see. We'll have a countdown. We'll have a betting pool. we'll take bets how long it'll take Lou to get one.
September 5th.
Get your bets in now, everybody. Send us an email, podcast@appchatter.com. We'll do a little bit of friendly, money-free betting to see when Lou breaks, see how long it takes. All right, Lou, what's your pick for this week?
My pick this week is the long-awaited onion app. No, not the one you slice it to put on your sandwiches.
Oh, darn.
This is the onion.com. Finally has their own app now to give you everything you've always wanted about the onion on your iPhone. You know, of course, I've downloaded the podcast for years and listened to, you know, Onion Radio Network and now their video network, which is just amazing. But now you can stream it to your iPhone whenever you want to by just using the app, which is kind of cool if you couldn't get back to your machine and dock your iPhone lately or download the app, or download the podcast individually. It just gives you access to everything, which is nice because I don't always think of going online to the onion.com. Or I don't have time to sometimes when I'm at work, so it's nice to be able to get it right from your iPhone if you have 5 minutes here and there to do it, and that stuff just cracks me up.
Now, what is The Onion, for those who don't know?
Oh, The Onion is the world's best source of news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, comedy news. They have all kinds of bizarre stories that they've always made up. I'm trying to get to the app right now so I can pull up what's current.
Let's see. The screenshots here in the iPhone store. Gay teen worried he might be Christian. First baby of 2010 finally born. Things like that. Yeah, they've got a lot of like parody joke things, but it's all handled in such a way that it's as if it's real news. The Onion was founded in 1756 when Friedrich Siegfried Zwiebel, an immigrant tuber farmer from Prussia, shrewdly bartered a sack of yams for a secondhand printing press and named his fledgling newspaper the Mercantile Onion after the only words of English that he knew. Somehow I don't think that's actually where it originated from, but okay, yeah. So this app, what does it cover? Is it news from the site, or is it
It just covers everything podcast? They put out. They post, if you go to theonion.com, it's basically an online newspaper, and they have, articles, they have video feeds, they have radio feeds you can download, and it's all just tongue-in-cheek humor. In fact, I posted a few of them to my Facebook account, and I invariably get people going, "What? Really?" It's like, no.
Oh, that's the best part.
Yeah.
There have been news agencies that have actually like forwarded on things from The Onion as if they're real, and then
That's just so wrong.
Especially when it was really young, they're like, oh, such and such reported that this happened, and everybody's like, no, guys, you know that's fake, right?
Well, you know, the thing about it is all their stuff is so well produced, just the way they do it. Even if you watch the video feed from, you'd swear you're watching ESPN for their sports stuff or, CNN for the news stuff. It's just the production values is very high, and they've done a great job with making it feel real and yet you just bust out laughing.
Yeah. All right. You know, I'm sold. I'm downloading this right now. I didn't even realize that.
And it's free.
Existed, and that's the best part. And honestly, I mean, this stuff really is it's hilarious. So I did not know that they had like full-length audio stuff in here. This is
the audio stuff's been around for quite a while. The video stuff I think is fairly new. I just started picking the video stuff a few months back. and it's probably not work friendly, so just keep that in mind.
yeah, that's a good point. All right, well,
what have you been picking up this week and playing with?
Well, unfortunately, I think you pwned me again here. Mine is both not free and not nearly as excitingly funny as The Onion, though actually you could get The Onion from mine too. I am an RSS junkie. I am on movie podcasts and Lost podcast and tech podcast, Apple podcasts and things like that. I've got so many different things that I have to keep up with that I have not browsed web pages in years. What I do is I use Google Reader and all of the different websites I'm interested in. I subscribe to their RSS feed and I read everything in Google Reader. And then occasionally, you know, I'll click on a link to browse through to an article at the actual page. But that's it. So my life is based around RSS. So it's important to me, especially now that I don't have as much time at a desk, at a computer anymore, that I am able to keep up with RSS feeds on my iPhone. And let me tell you, if anybody has any questions about RSS readers for the iPhone, please email me. I will not steer you wrong. There are many different apps out there. I've tried every RSS reader in the App Store, except there's one that didn't interest me, so I didn't buy it. So, I dare say I am an RSS expert for iPhone apps. So, if you have any questions about specific apps or what might fill certain needs, podcast@appchatter.com. My personal favorite is one called Reader, and it's R-E-E-D-E-R. It's one I only just found recently, and apparently there's an earlier version with which there were some issues, and people didn't like it that much. But I found it because somebody was reporting about how now that this new version is out, it's like a whole new app as far as reliability and stability and functionality. And so I thought I'd give it a try. It is $2.99, so it's not free. But if you browse a lot of websites, I really recommend you check this one out. It's got a very simple interface. At first, it's almost too simple looking, and you wonder if it's actually going to give you the same amount of functionality as a lot of other RSS readers out there. But the reality is, it syncs very quickly with Google Reader. It's got a very clean, easy-to-use interface. I'm the type of person that browses by folder. I've got a folder for iPhone apps. I've got a folder for tech news. I've got a folder for blogs for, like, you know, friends of mine or, you know, celebrities I follow, things like that. And it's a very clean, simple interface. You swipe across things. If you want to mark them as already read without actually reading the article. And the funny thing is, a lot of the other RSS readers, you do the whole swipe thing to mark something as read, but if you don't swipe exactly straight across, then instead it scrolls up or down, or you have to start the swipe in a certain spot. None of them really work that well. And this one, it's just the feel, I guess, of the application. It's very smooth, it's very responsive, and it's very, very functional. You can browse through to a web page directly from within the app, which is great. Let's see what else. You can share things from within the app. You can use the Google Share function, which of course integrates with Buzz now if you use Google Buzz. If not, you can add notes to things. There's an online service called Pinboard, which I've never heard of before, but if you use that, great. I have heard of things like Twitter and Delicious and Instapaper and Read It Later. You can email the article to yourself to read later if you don't use Instapaper, though Instapaper is pretty sweet and you should consider that. You can load a link up in Safari. You can copy the link to paste it in a different application. You can use Mobilizer on a page to translate it into it takes the text and it puts it into a format more easily read on mobile phones. The functionality of this really is pretty sweet, and yet it's got a very simple interface. Again, there are a lot of other RSS readers out there that look a little fancier, but I can't think of anything I'm missing with this one. And what I use all the time for features, I think just they work much better in this. This feels very Apple-y to me because it just works.
No, I've used Reader on Google and on the iPhone from the Google app, but I haven't you know, played with anything else. Is it that much better, that much easier to work with?
I think it is, and here's why. Anytime you use a web app, you have to reload the entire interface whenever you load a new page. Now, I will say that the Google Reader, not to be confused with the application Reader that I'm referring to, but the Google Reader web app is optimized for the iPhone very well. I don't have any complaints with it, but it still behaves kind of like a web app. It's a little slower, and you know, for me, it works in a pinch. I would rather have an app where I don't have to load up Safari. I don't have to, you know, browse to different tabs. I don't have to wait as much for things to load. I feel like the interaction with the items is much smoother if you use an RSS app. And actually, I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've used the web app. I'm not sure you can do things like the send to stuff, like send to Instapaper or send to Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not sure. See, I mainly use it on the desktop. So yeah. I'm just trying to think if it's, because I've used it on the Google app, and I'm a little frustrated with it, you know, when you come right down to it. So it's kind of, I was asking how much better Reader really was, and it sounds like it's a lot easier to use.
I think it is. I on the desktop, I use Google Reader. I don't use a third party application at all. I'm pretty impressed with their web interface overall. Mm-hmm. But on the iPhone, I really like Reader. I like some other stuff too. NewsRack is pretty good. Byline is pretty good, but that was, I think, the one that had the swiping issue with me. Maybe it's just the way I swipe. I don't know. NewsRack was good, but there was something about the way to mark things as read that I didn't like. There was another one I used that it just takes forever to sync. I don't know what to say. There's a lot of other good stuff out there, and you know, everybody's going to have their own favorite. But for me, Reader is... It's not free. It's $2.99, which I don't think is the most expensive one. I think Byline is $4.99, and I don't recall on NewsRack, which was one of my other favorites. But yeah, I would recommend Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, and again, it's $2.99, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
It sounds like if you want to do it on the iPhone, that's the one to use, I guess.
The only thing it won't do, from what I can see here, is it won't directly send to Facebook. But I don't recall any of the others doing it either, and you can always copy the link and send it to Facebook that way. So,
and plus, we all know you don't like Facebook, so.
And I don't like Facebook, so honestly, I really don't care, and that's the truth. You know, hey, but I can email it for, you know, so I can, that's how I aggregate show notes for the different podcasts, and I can tweet it. So I'm pretty happy.
Cool.
And the sync is just, it's very seamless, it's snappy, it's awesome. So that would be my recommendation. Reader, pick it up if you're an RSS junkie. So cool. All right, anything else we need to cover?
No, I think we've kind of beat the iPad to death. Not like those kids, but you know,
no, they beat the iPad to death. Yeah, no, man, 3 weeks.
It'll go by like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it'll just like 21 days. Yeah, and then you won't talk to me anymore. Sigh. All right. Actually, no, and here's a good question before we sign off. Some people were asking a little bit. Unfortunately, they didn't sound very upset about it, which is a relief. But, you know, they were asking, first of all, whether or not we're even going to cover iPad applications. And second of all, if we are, whether we're going to focus more on that than the iPhone. And honestly, I think what we're going to do is we're going to focus on what's most newsworthy. I think that for now, Lou will probably be the iPhone guy and I might be the iPad guy, because that's a pretty good way to split it up.
Sure. Yeah, you'll have one and I won't, so.
Yeah. And, you know, I still have an iPhone. I still rely on it. So there's still going to be, and I, like I said before, I see a lot of stuff being universal apps in the future. I predict that with the exception of some really heavy duty gaming, that's going to be the way most people go. So I think it will apply for most of our listeners out there, whether you have an iPad or not. So we're going to cover some iPad stuff, but it will not turn into the iPad show. Okay, we are still going to focus on all of the different Apple apps across all of the different mobile devices. So iPhone only users, be reassured, we are definitely going to cater to you just as much, if not more, than iPad users. And yet, iPad users out there, please understand that we are going to be a source for iPad app reviews as well. Absolutely. So,
sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, with that, we will sign off. Don't forget to add us as friends if you're on either the OpenFaint network or the Plus Plus network. I am Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E.
And I believe I am Mile High, M-Y-L-E-H-I-G-H on both.
And you can reach us via email at podcast@appchatter.com. And, you know, another thing I want to point out, since all of our listeners out there are either iPhone or iPod Touch users, and I imagine probably most of them iPhone, the voice memo application in the iPhone, I don't know if you know this, this can be our tip of the week, you can record a short message and email it. So, if you want to send us some feedback or questions or comments or anything like that, you can record a quick message and click the share button, I believe it is. I'm doing this off the top of my head here, but there's I think there's a share button, and then you can send it as an email to podcast@appchatter.com. And then we will hear it. Some of them we might play on the air if they're audible and if you're nice.
If they pay us.
If you... Yeah, if you
no.
if you want to record a message about Lou not getting an iPad, I would think that's very funny.
Oh,
nothing like rubbing it in. I'm sorry, I'm bitter. I'll be fine after the 3 weeks are done.
Sure.
All right, that's it for this week. Don't forget to check out appchatter.com for more iPad and iPhone application news and reviews. And if you'd like to hear more podcasts from us, you can check out randomchatter.com. And that's it. So we will see you guys next week when we will be talking about the big reveal of iPhone 4.0.
Look forward to it.
All right. See you guys next week.
Good night, everybody.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Cell Dweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as Silly as a Sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.